This is a fun week for me. It's the 7th anniversary of working for 9 to 5 Mac, so like this feels like a significant point in time for myself. And
if it's the 7th anniversary for you, it must be the 7th anniversary for me as well.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because there was not a period where we didn't work together, really. It was very close.
Yeah, like you started like at the start of April, pretty much, right?
April 1st, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of like, I think my first post was on the 23rd of April. Mm-hmm. So, but for like the first like 3 months, I think I only posted like 4 times because I was, you know, juggling uni and I was like not very confident with, you know, 9 to 5 Mac and stuff. And then I kind of got into the groove or whatever. But yeah, we've been on a journey for a while.
And that makes the podcast like, is it 5 years old now? We're on the
506, yeah.
Yeah, we're on the 271st episode. We don't skip weeks, even for holidays. So, I think it's like 5 years. That's really cool. I don't think about things that way, but like, you know, my kids are 7 and 2. So like, and this all predates them, really. So
yeah, like we started doing the show the year I joined university, basically.
Mm-hmm. And so you went through the whole process. And
yeah, so that was like 3 years in our anniversary now. Basically 4 years out of university. It's kind of crazy how the time goes.
Yeah, I look at a number like 271 episodes and it just doesn't feel that significant, you know. It's because it's not like 500 or anything yet, but that's 5 years though. Is what?
Yeah, 271 divided by 52 is 5.2 years.
Yeah, so like 5 years, man. Maybe like we did like a couple of emergency episodes, like maybe like 1 time or 2 times. So, but not many. I just wanted to think about that for a second. You know, and we did that episode, wasn't it? Like, maybe a couple years ago or last year, where we just like looked back at the podcast and must have been like last fall, last winter, because we were talking about like milestones in Apple's history. And
yeah, I think maybe I can't remember if it was exact, but we did when we did the year in review, we talked about our first Apple products, right? And
okay, yep.
How we got joined into the Apple world, and we definitely talked about like the podcast stuff a bit then, for sure.
Yeah, I think it became like half the episode. So
yeah.
Nice. So I will try and search for that and put that in the show notes on this episode. First, in terms of stories, I want to talk about some new exclusives that we have at 9 to 5 Mac this week, and then some quick headlines, and then we'll get into some greater topics after that. So the first thing that's new that we covered this week is it comes from Felipe Esposito for 9 to 5 Mac, and the headline is that Keychain Password Manager in iOS 14 will gain new 1Password-like features. And the key here is that this is all based on the iOS 14 code that we've been looking at for a while now, that iCloud Keychain, for the first time, will be able to manage 2-factor authentication. And that's different than now, because you need to have a third party app to do that. And it's, like there's Apple stuff that you use your device for as like the second, you know, sort of way to authorize, but otherwise.
Yes. Apple obviously integrates 2-factor into the OS for its services.
Yeah. But if you want to do Twitter or something, it's like you do SMS or an app from the App Store.
Yeah, so you have to go to the App Store and you have to get like Google Authenticator, or you have to get like the Authy one. And
I use 1Password for it now.
You use 1Password, yeah. I don't use 1Password, so I rely on iCloud Keychain for, you know, actual like website password syncing.
Uh-huh. Which is reasonable. I mean, it's built in.
Yeah, and it works. I've never had a problem with it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it really annoys me that I can't put my 2-factor codes in there as well. And I used one app for a while and then I deleted it and I lost them all, so that was a pain.
Oh no.
And then at the moment I have Authy, but because it's not like built in or from, it just feels flimsy, and like one day it might go away or it might stop working.
Does it populate your clipboard, and or like if it comes time to paste it in, does it show up on the keyboard suggestions like an SMS code would?
It does not show up on the keyboard.
Okay, because 1Password does, and that just feels like what we'll see from Apple's when it happens too. It's like that's where
it
will show up.
Yeah, for sure. Like Apple put it on the keyboard. Yeah,
yeah.
I think 1Password's kind of like half hacking that API that shows it there, because it's only meant to be 4 passwords, not 2-factor code. So they're probably kind of like, you know, we're just treating it like a password, even though it's not. If you see what I mean? So
right, yeah.
I mean, it's great. I'm really happy if they add. Like, they just let me put it in that database, because there are definitely services that I will not name, but I do have services that I still rely on a SMS for, primarily because, like, I don't have a good place to put the two-factor codes, right? Like, I'm always scared of, like, Authy just not launching on a beta. You know, like the iOS 14 beta, Authy doesn't launch, then I'm screwed, if you know what I mean. Whereas if it was built in, I'm a lot more comfortable with that. So
yeah,
I'm ready to put my two-factor codes into iCloud Keychain. Give it to me.
Yeah, that will be a cool feature. Apple's made SMS so easy, too, that it's like, we know it's not secure, and it's sometimes maybe better to not even have that on SMS than to use it at all, because your phone number, you know, is not protected and can be spoofed. But they've made it so easy that if you would like the autofill stuff on the keyboard, that like if you get an SMS code to your phone and have SMS messages appear on your Mac, you know, it'll pop up there and like you can populate it or even on your phone or your iPad. So it's very easy to use that method. And so in that case, if you don't use another app like 1Password, or your app makes you go and copy and paste, then it's like way harder to not use SMS, so that this will even the playing field there. So bring it on.
Yeah, one thing I was kind of upset that we didn't find evidence of is like a dedicated passwords app.
Yeah, man.
Like the iCloud Keychain is a functional service, but the UI, when you're not getting the keyboard autofill, is like a third level down into settings, and it's very unpretty. And like, you know, I can get on with it, but it's my family. I also just tell my family to use iCloud Keychain because they're not going to use, you know, what is 1Password to them? Like, exactly, they're not going to do it. But they're like, you know, if on the occasion where they have to go in and find the password, it's like I have to tell them where to go every single time because it's not very user friendly at all. It's like a debug console.
I tell my aunt to use 1Password because of that same reason, but it's the opposite solution that I don't think she could ever figure out. You know, the UI for iCloud Keychain, but then she can do 1Password. So
they need a. Apple needs to make like a passwords app that's dedicated on the home screen, and it's actually meant to be user facing and just list basically work off the same data source as iCloud Keychain, but actually have like a better visual for it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The next story is about the Apple Watch and this new Apple Watch for kids sort of mode that the watch can be in. And we learned that from iOS 14 and watch OS 7. Code. The other thing we learned from that is that there'll be this new school time mode where the watch can behave in certain ways during certain hours, like school time. But the interesting thing here is that it's an answer to how will the watch address activity tracking for kids, because I know as a dad and with my daughter wearing an Apple Watch, she can do something like very... she can run around and play and get her heart way up, you know, or she can run around playing and do a lot of movement, but she's not getting very much credit on the watch because she's a kid and it's like not hard. And I don't think her heart rate is that high. So it's just not a very good, like using that and then how to burn calories and everything is just not a very good goal. So I don't even have her pay attention to any of that at all. But what will be new here is they kind of have a playful name for it internally, which is like the Apple Watch Junior Experience. And what that will do is replace the move ring, which is the red ring in the activity rings, that uses active calories right now. And when you're using the Apple Watch in kids mode, it'll use move time instead. So I think the Apple Watch already tracks like how many minutes you're moving, and you'll see that in trends and you'll see that in different places, but you can't make that a ring. At least in this kids mode for the Apple Watch, move time will be, you know, the customizable goal there. So 30 minutes of exercise won't change, 12 stand hours won't change. But then the move time is what you can set. So then you could say, rather than having a 500 calorie, active calories burned goal, you could have 90 minutes of just movement throughout the day or whatever the goal recommendation is. And, you know, then it tracks not just like when you're, you know, super active and everything, but like, you know, if you're a kid playing outside, like, you know, that kind of thing that will be easier to fill in. So, I like this a lot. It's something that I recognize as an issue for my daughter using the Apple Watch, but just didn't think much of it because it's kind of like outside of the intended use. But then this is the answer to like, you know, that problem. So it's nice.
Yeah, that is actually, I'm surprised they're not going to like modify the stand ring. I don't know. I feel that's quite like anti-child as well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's not very clear. Like the exercise minute one makes sense. The move time is fine, even though that's then kind of similar to the green ring, if you know what I mean, because that's also measured in time. And then
I think move time is
in development, so maybe they're going to change the other rings as well.
That's true,
but it's good that they're like adapting it at all, right?
Yeah, I think move time though is much easier to register than exercise. Like I can go for a bike ride and track the workout, and have like 5 minutes of exercise from an hour long bike ride. And part of it is like, I'm just not exhausting myself. So I think move time is much easier to register than exercise. Because it's that brisk walk or above that is exercise. And then like
if you're actually trying to simplify it for a child, then maybe you should only have move time and not have the other two.
I think stand is often confused. But it's either it's stand up, move around for a minute of every hour. Yeah. And that one I'm okay with, because like if you're sitting at your desk doing homework, or if you're sitting on the couch playing video games, like it's not a bad idea to get up and walk around, take a break, you know, drink a glass of water, and then, you know, kind of start from scratch. But yeah, and then the exercise one, as long as it's easier, because it's so hard sometimes to register, like if you're just doing like a casual walk that isn't a brisk walk. Or in my case, like the bike ride the other night, I was tired. I was ready to stop riding, but then I had only registered 5 minutes of exercise. So, you know, but we'll see how that ends up developing, because, you know, this is all from December really. And it's not until, June that we see the first version of it come out in beta, and then September.
And obviously reported on all the trackpad and cursor stuff being in the 14 build, and then they shipped it early in 13.4.
Yeah. And then some custom stuff won't be available, you know, even though it was in the code. So it'll come much later, if ever. Next thing there was this version of Logic that includes this live loop feature that you see on GarageBand for iPad. And it was shown in Logic for Mac on a section of Apple's website, and it was since removed, but it's definitely an unreleased version of Logic, and it's like another classic case of Apple leaking their own stuff officially. So when I looked at the Apple Store, there was this whole thing that was like, if it's not on apple.com, it's not official yet. So, you know, it's like that was the answer to, you know, customers asking about like future iPhones. And there's so many cases now where a leak happens on apple.com making it official. This is one of those things. I don't play much with the GarageBand on iPhone or iPad like I used to do with GarageBand on the Mac. But I know if that was like my first access to it, I totally would, and I'd love it. The live loops thing is, you've already got like a loops feature where you can bring in loops from this like catalog of Apple supplied loops. The live loop one is like more dynamic, and so I think that'll be kind of cool. And it's just crazy.
Yeah,
that
the live loop
this long.
One's like a really like sophisticated beat pad where it cycles through the grid basically over and over, and you can turn things off, change things around, move them up and down. And they added that with the original iPad Pro, like 2015 iPad Pro. So it's been in GarageBand for iOS for a long time, and it has not yet made the jump to the desktop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's one of the appeals to me from live loops is with the loops, there's a much greater chance that you're going to use the same loop as something else that'll be familiar. And it's just like, it's just more stock. And with a live loop, there's so much potential for like making it a dynamic that you made different choices than somebody else did for that same loop that it'll sound different. So I like it. I hope to see it soon.
This could be just complete like, you know, wish casting, but maybe the screenshot that we saw was representing a new Logic for Mac that will also have an iPad counterpart.
It's very good screen wish casting. Last week I mentioned that I was trying this adapter for CarPlay that turned standard CarPlay in cars that you buy that come with CarPlay into wireless CarPlay, because like my 2017 Honda Civic has an integrated screen that also controls, you know, everything else in the car, basically, you know, the climate in the car. And so I didn't want to change the screen. It would look very weird to have a different screen in the car, and I'd lose like some control. So I tried this adapter with very limited, low expectation, and it turns out that it actually worked. I mentioned that last week I put it in the show notes, and I forgot, and someone emailed to ask for it, and I replied back with the email. My mistake. This week I'll have a link of the actual review of like what it looks like and how it works. So it surprised me. This is something that I didn't know like how much interest there was in this, but you know, I cover CarPlay, and this was like a big impact for me in terms of using CarPlay, because suddenly my car has wireless CarPlay, and it really is great. Like I've wired crop is fine for like longer trips, you know, where you know you're going to be plugged in. But getting the music from your phone, your contacts, you know, navigation, or even for like traffic around town, it's really cool to have without having to plug in your phone. And so this does that. And the first night, like I tried putting it together and it worked all right. And I didn't need to drive. And the next time I got in the car, like it really surprised me. It's like, I didn't even think about it. Like I wasn't expecting it. And then just CarPlay was there. And I even did a thing in the review of like a video of how long it took to initiate, from cranking the car up to having CarPlay be ready to go. And it's like, you know, it's a 38 second video, and some of that is like just seeing CarPlay already be active. So it was like 36 seconds tops, which is not that bad compared to like, you know, getting in the car, going off and like thinking, oh, now I didn't plug in the phone. You know, it's not terrible at all. Something you mentioned to me was like, there's obviously the risk of a future update to iOS, like breaking this.
Yeah.
Luckily, the adapter gets firmware updates, so there's incentive for them to keep supporting this in future versions of iOS, if possible.
Yeah, that's definitely a nice safety net. So that they're, because obviously they're selling the same hardware over and over and over again on Amazon, and they're just updating the software every time that iOS changes.
Yeah.
And so if there is a way for them to do it when the next iOS update comes out, they can do it. But there's always obviously the lingering risk that, you know, Apple closes whatever loophole they're using for good, and then they can't do it anymore.
Yeah, there's a really weird thing on the UI of this thing, which is like when you, I guess it's when you're pairing, and when you, I tried to do a thing where I went for a drive without my phone, and you still saw CarPlay as like an option on the car's UI, and I tapped it, and then it like launched the like looking for device or like pick your devices if you've got multiple screen. And so I thought maybe I could pair my watch to this thing and it would actually work for the first time, where I can stream from my Apple Watch to the car stereo. I've tried other adapters, you know, and they haven't worked for me yet. So maybe this would be it. And it wouldn't connect. The watch couldn't find it. But the UI is hilarious because it just looks like an iPhone. Like it's iOS. It shows like your signal, and it shows like you, if you had two SIMs with perfect signal. So there's like the bars, and there's like the dots under the bars.
That's wild.
And some yeah. So it's.
Do you remember about 6 months ago now when Quo released the report about there being a portless iPhone in 2021?
Yeah.
And one of the mitigations that we came up with was, what if Apple sells a dongle, a wireless dongle that adds the port back? And this is basically that, because it's streaming CarPlay wirelessly from the port to the car.
Yeah, I mean, I think the adapter requires the car to have CarPlay to work. So the car firmware needs to be there.
Yeah, for sure, because obviously the adapter's pretending like it's plugged in directly. So it's sending the CarPlay signal, which the car can read. Uh-huh. If the CarPlay signal was sent to a car that doesn't understand CarPlay, it just wouldn't know what to do with those.
Right. Yeah. So, for that reason, like you just wouldn't ever expect to see even Apple make an adapter that gives you CarPlay in any car with a screen. But yeah, I mean, man, if they want to bring wireless CarPlay to all these cars that already have regular CarPlay, a version of this from Apple that will always be maintained would be worth it. Shoot, man.
And Apple loves selling a good dongle.
Yeah, they do. And you know, $100 versus like the price of a new head unit and the installation and, you know, the labor involved in that is a deal. You know, it's great. And in my car, I was just never going to change. I was never going to risk messing up my existing setup for this, you know, for wireless. But steering wheel controls work. Playback works. Like, all it's great. So this week you can actually go and like read the review of that and see all the pictures and everything and a little video too. Next up, I want to talk about some app updates, starting with Spotify, which has a new version of their app on the Apple Watch. For watchOS 6, you can now use Siri to control your Spotify library. A lot of people wanted this. A lot more people were upset that they did this and not offline music for Spotify on the Apple Watch. I don't know. I don't use Spotify, so I use Apple Music, and I have everything you could want. But if you use Spotify for some reason, then, you know, a personal reason, then this is a halfway there, you're one closer to having a decent experience on the Apple Watch. You just can't sync your music over to it and play it offline or stream it, right?
Yes.
No. Well, it's basically your remote control, and now you can use voice control for that.
Yeah, I meant no as in yes.
Yeah. And then last...
You know, Spotify has the capability, but they don't want to do it. They cried about wanting to be able to do it, and now they can do it. They haven't done it.
Yeah. Their EU, you know, propaganda campaign of, like, it's not fair, it's just not aging well. Last app I want to mention is Facebook Messenger for Mac. This was announced over a year ago and then released in some countries a month ago. As of Thursday of this week, it's available, appears to be globally, at least it's in the US and a bunch of other places now. So if Messenger on the Mac is your thing, then there you go. One thing about it and a bunch of other messaging apps that I have to use is, you know, messages, like you close the app, it's closed and you still get messages from it, you know, and you can choose to open it or not. Like no one else can do that, right? So that's the same case here. And there seems to be a bug in it, like where if you leave it open but not like having a window shown, it will open when you open another window for some reason, which is concerning. And then the behind the scenes part of this is that it's an Electron app, not a Mars or Catalyst app. So it's not the iPad version. It's its whole version on its own. So
I just to correct you slightly, I'm pretty sure a third party app could still send you notifications when the app's closed.
So an app like I use deliveries to track packages, and there's an optional, maybe even like a separate installation where you say like keep running Deliveries Express in the background. Yeah, so it's like you have to consent to it. So maybe that's what they and then at that
right,
point
I think with the deliveries thing, that's all because it's happening on your Mac, right? Yeah. It doesn't have the server sending the notifications. But an app like Facebook Messenger could register for push notifications on the Mac and then do the same thing that it would do on iOS, because obviously the iOS app isn't running all the time, it just receives notifications and shows them. It could do the same thing on the Mac because then the Facebook servers are sending the notifications to your machine. So if they wanted to, they could do that.
Oh, there was a mail app that did this. It was Spark a while ago, several years ago, and it really
annoyed me. That's because that's why all the third-party mail apps on iOS basically run the inbox on the server so they can send the push notifications to your device when the app's shut. Yeah.
And it was controversial whenever Spark was doing it. And for me, it just didn't work because I was now I use Apple Mail for both work and personal, but I was using other apps for work, so I could turn it off until I use my Mac. And I couldn't turn it off when I was using Spark. I was still getting notified. So, well, cool. I learned something that I semi knew already.
Finding the right person to hire for your company can be challenging. So when you're ready to hire, LinkedIn can help. LinkedIn Jobs matches your role with qualified candidates so you can find the right person quickly. Get up and running from the LinkedIn Jobs dashboard. Simply start with your company name, job title, and location. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with 675 million members worldwide. And the LinkedIn Jobs platform screens candidates with the hard and soft skills that you're looking for so you can hire the right person fast. Education and grades are important, but LinkedIn also considers qualities like collaboration, work ethic, and adaptability. LinkedIn Jobs finds people that are not only qualified, but fit in with your company's culture. LinkedIn does the legwork to find the most qualified candidates so you can focus on hiring the person who will transform your business. It looks beyond work skills and connects you with candidates who match your business perfectly. LinkedIn Jobs makes sure your job post gets in front of the people that you want to hire. And that's why companies rate LinkedIn Jobs the number one hiring platform for delivering quality hires. Find the right person for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/happyhour. Again, that's linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring the show.
Apple has a new website and a new app for screening yourself based on your experience to decide if you were exposed to coronavirus and might have COVID-19 and need to seek help. So it's a very simple app. It's a very simple website, and you just walk through and answer a few questions on a survey. Some of the questions seem a little bit outdated, but this is made in partnership with the Center for Disease Control, with the White House, and with FEMA. And it was out of the blue. Apple hadn't announced this, the website or the app, before there was an announcement that Google would have something like this. And I don't think this was...
there was that whole drama about Google, about, you know, the president saying that Google was going to do it, and then Google said they weren't doing it, and then Google changed their mind because the president said they were making it. Mm-hmm. So then Google tried to make one over the weekend, and then, you know, like a week later, Apple's like, hey, we made one.
I think Google's was in one state and it wasn't going well, and maybe it was more ambitious than this. I'm not sure, but it certainly wasn't out yet. And then Apple came out.
I think what was promised was more ambitious, and then what they delivered was basically the same as what Apple did. Ah, if you see what I mean?
Shocker. Yeah. I tried the app and I answered. I don't think I answered like honestly, just to see like what will it do if it wants you to find, you know, follow up with this. But it gives you.
I mean, realistically. Like the government advice around the world and this survey is simple enough, right? That you can know what it's going to tell you to do by the question,
correct,
the way you answer each question, right?
Like, yeah.
If you have these symptoms, you're going to get told to go to the hospital. If you have these other symptoms, or you don't have the core symptoms, you're going to get told to stay at home and self isolate.
I mean, it's like a flow chart, and
yeah, exactly. And there's like two exits. That's basically it.
Correct.
Are you dying right now? Like, if you've got a serious problem, you know, you need to call 911 immediately or the local emergency number. Mm-hmm. If you've got these symptoms, then you should probably go and get checked out. If you're having struggling to breathe, anything else, just stay at home and self isolate. Right?
Cause yeah. And I think it included. I think it probably includes demographics. Cause that probably answered my age. And but at the end of the thing, like, I was trying to get it to tell me to go to the doctor, and it told me to stay home for a couple of weeks. One of the questions was, I think, was like very useful anymore. This is what I mean by outdated. It would ask if you had traveled internationally recently, and in America, it doesn't matter. Like, you don't need to travel to a different city, you know, to risk exposure. So that question.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same in Britain, right? Regardless of whether you're infected or not, you should stay at home and self-isolate. So
right. Yeah.
It's kind of like, obviously, they have to do this, right? And it's useful for some people who, you know, haven't seen any of the news coverage, or they don't know, and they just, oh, this is on the App Store, maybe I should check it out. And, you know, it's probably helped a small number of people get to the hospital when they otherwise wouldn't, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. But it's just nice common sense advice. And there was some backlash that was like, why is Apple doing this? It's like, why is it Apple's job? It's like, they're a huge company, right? They have plenty of money. If they want to help out by doing this, then let them do it, right? There's no harm, right?
I mean, if you're shopping for AirPods, there's a banner at the top of the page that will push you to the website if you click it.
Yeah, it's basically just a form of awareness, right? And mm-hmm. in the same way as that they're donating masks, in the same way that they're doing, you know, they're putting the government videos on the front page of the App Store. Mm-hmm. This survey is basically just another form of awareness and marketing for, you know, the global health crisis. Like, it's perfectly within Apple's MO to, like, help the world, right? And it's... I don't even understand how this was controversial at all, because it's not even like, it's not doing any, if it was telling like random advice like, you must wear your Apple Watch today, or, you know, or you must do this thing that isn't
consistent,
you know, that no government health authority is recommending you do, right, then I can understand, like, you know, Apple shouldn't be giving medical advice. But it's not that. It's literally just like essentially you're getting one of two outcomes at the end of this 5-question survey. Like, I don't understand why this was
I think
it's just nice.
The big unspoken thing too is that Apple's got the most trust in terms of privacy, so that you can, you know, if you're worried, you can do this without being worried if your data is going to be, you know, used for anything else. So and there's certainly a lot of people who take it less seriously than others, so, you know, so it's inconsistent that way. So it's a positive thing.
Yeah, I mean, just personally, you can probably tell from my voice this week, I may have COVID-19 right now. Like, I had a bit of a cough. I didn't really have a fever. I had like flu symptoms, right? So it was probably just a cold, but it could have been coronavirus. And, you know, I'm just like, because everyone in the country has to stay at home anyway. So it's not like, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm fine, I'll go out. Like, everyone's just been sitting at home or whatever. But So I filled out the form and I actually did my real symptoms. And of course, it just tells you to stay at home and self-isolate. It's like, okay, great. You know, it's basically just an ad for staying at home and self-isolating, just wrapped up in a nice little survey. And
I imagine,
you
know, if
just
you
spreading the world message.
Imagine if you used it and said like your age was older than it would, or if you were in a certain risk group, because I think it asks you about different conditions, then it would give you different advice. But yeah, it makes sense for you. Let's talk about something that is really interesting that I think you were super excited about, which is Amazon Prime Video and how you can now buy TV shows and movies in the app for the first time. Like this is massive.
You could call this a significant shift.
You could. I mean, it's
right. So let's start with Netflix, right? Netflix famously left the App Store because they wanted to stop giving Apple 30% of their monthly subscription for, you know, quote unquote, doing nothing, right? You sell, and Apple's rules forever have been, if you sell digital content in your app, you have to sell it with in-app purchase, and you cannot link to your own website where you sell it, where you also sell it. So not only do you have to use in-app purchase, you can't say go to netflix.com and sign up there. They would let you price the subscription or the media more expensive in the app to offset the 30% revenue difference, right? So you could have, like, Netflix could, if they wanted to, sell it in the App Store for $13.99 when they sell their subscription for $9.99 on their website. But they said, you know, we're not doing this. We're not cooperating with Apple. We're leaving the store. We don't want to give Apple 30% of our income. Fine. That was their decision, right? They left. And that's basically been the status quo for every single app from every single company, full stop, right? Spotify is complaining about this now to the European Commission because obviously they're mad that they have to pay 30% of their subscriptions to Apple when Apple Music obviously doesn't have to pay 30% to themselves. But it's not like Spotify was being singled out as you have to pay 30% and no one else does. Everybody was paying 30% or not paying at all and not letting you sign up inside the app. This dates back to what, like 2011 with the Amazon Kindle app, because in the very early stages of the iPad, the Kindle app let you buy books through the Kindle bookstore on the iPad directly. And then Apple was like, wait, we want to get some of that money because you're buying it in the app. So then they put out these rules that outlawed it. And this is going back to 2010, 2011. So this is a decade now of these rules being instated. And ever since then, the Kindle app has just been a reader app, a library app, where you can see your books that you've purchased elsewhere from Amazon, but you can't actually buy them directly inside the Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no exceptions to that, right? Like, universal law. So now we zoom forward to 2020. Boom. And then randomly, yesterday, the Amazon Prime Video app suddenly let people start buying or renting films and TV shows without using Apple's in-app purchase. It would show your Amazon payment method. Now, if you go to apple.com, you find the App Store review guidelines, you can find clause 3.13, which specifically says digital media must be bought with in-app purchase and you cannot use your own payment methods. There's different rules for if it's a physical product, so that's why the Amazon shopping app, you can buy like toilet paper or pens or whatever you want with your Amazon payment method because that's physical products. Apple didn't have any purview over physical products. Or if you're gifting to a charity, they're also exempt and they can go through their payment methods. But digital content, like movies, TV shows, books, games, blah, 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 always you have to go through net purchase. But then suddenly, out of the blue, Amazon Prime Video was letting people buy it not using app purchase. And then it stayed up for a few more minutes. And there were questions, right? Because the Amazon Prime Video app is, you know, part and parcel a thin app around a website, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they use the same JavaScript code base across iOS, Android, all these platforms. And so maybe it was just a bug and they were accidentally showing the Amazon checkout flow to iOS customers for a bit. Maybe they turned it on and they hadn't told Apple they were going to do it. So then we were waiting for some drama where the app got pulled. Maybe it was going to be some sort of special deal between Apple and Amazon. It really wasn't clear, right?
It was the only thing that was clear was that it was not normal. It was like if Tim Cook walked in a Microsoft store and just sat down and started working. It was different, and we had no idea why.
The core premise of all of these antitrust complaints against the App Store is that Apple forces people to use Apple in-app purchase And that means that you're either giving Apple 30% of non-consumable products or 15% of subscription products after a year, right? Like, all of this stuff, whether you're talking about Netflix, Spotify, all of these complaints, Tile, right? There are other complaints that you can yield against the App Store as well. But the primary one, when you get down to brass tacks, it's money. It's 30% of every purchase, right? So this is crazy. It is, like, literally unprecedented. We haven't seen this happen anywhere else. And so we were, like, flying around trying to work out what happened. And then we worked out that you could actually buy stuff with in-app purchase still. And the crux was, if you have an Amazon payment method set up on your Amazon account, it shows the Amazon checkout flow. So you're buying through Amazon. If you don't have any Amazon payment methods, it shows the Apple in-app purchase sheet and you're buying through the App Store. Okay, so it's a bit more sane, right? It's not just entirely Amazon purchasing. But still, that behavior would still be outlawed by the App Store on any normal day. And then finally, we got to the bottom of it because Apple released a statement to us and a few other people that announced that this was not a novel thing. This is a quote-unquote established program which allows certain companies to be able to opt to buy, rent movies and TV shows using the payment method tied to their existing video subscription. Okay, now,
my immediate reaction was like, oh, they're trying to make this sound like it's not different, but it's definitely different.
Calling this an established program is a huge stretch of the truth, right? Like, they quote in this paragraph that that current partners already included Altice One, which is a cable company, and Canal Plus, which is a French cable company. And we even got replies that said, I've been a Canal Plus subscriber forever, and I've never seen this. It's like, I guess technically this program existed, but these Altice One and Canal Plus are so minuscule in the scheme of the world, right, that even if they were doing this before, no one had ever noticed it before.
I mean, we heard from a reader who said, I have Canal Plus and I had no idea this existed, that they could do this.
Isn't that what I just said?
Yeah. I don't usually listen when you talk, though.
I'll forgive you.
Okay. It's been five years. Ah.
Yeah. Listening to the other person, that's a piece of work.
I just took a walk.
Amazon Prime Video, right? Amazon is obviously 10, 100, 1,000, a million times bigger than these tiny cable companies. So this is essentially the start of a new normal where Apple gets to pick very, very, very small slice of the App Store market that are allowed to buy digital content using their own payment methods, not using in-app purchase. So yes, they call it an established program. It's basically a new initiative. What's interesting is that this program is basically, you know, essentially invite only. What Apple's full statement says, that it's a program for premium subscription video entertainment providers to offer a variety of customer benefits like Apple TV app integration, AirPlay 2, TVOS app, Universal Search, Siri, and then single or zero sign-on integration as well. And then on qualifying premium video entertainment apps, customers will have the option to buy or rent movies and TV shows using the payment method on their account. But basically that means, you know, Apple is judge, jury, and executioner. They can choose whoever they want to participate in this program, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at least currently, it only applies to premium video apps only. And just last week, we were talking about the fact that the App Store outright bans game streaming services. So it's like crazy at the moment. The current framework of the App Store means that depending on the media type that you sell as a catalog, it depends on how you get treated dramatically. If you're a catalog of games, you're not allowed in the App Store at all. If you're a catalog of music, like Spotify, you can be in the App Store, but you have to pay Apple 30% on every purchase, right? If you're most video apps, you have to pay Apple 30% on every purchase. But if you're a favored, blessed, premium subscription video entertainment provider, you don't have to comply with any of those restrictions.
Yeah, it's like there was a moment of question, and forgive me if you've already mentioned this, but Kindle and Comixology are big examples from Amazon where you can't spend your money there directly. You've got to go out of the app and buy the content. You can use tokens, which is a recent development, but there was a moment of hope there. Or maybe these two things will also get this ability if they worked out a deal with Amazon. And you've seen so much stuff with Alexa and Apple Music and Apple Podcasts control with Echo speakers. I feel like maybe and then the TV app on Fire TV sticks and boxes and cubes, that maybe they just have like an Amazon deal that would make all of this much easier for everybody.
And the Amazon retailer shop, right, to sell Apple products first party.
Yeah, there's a lot of work going together there. But that's not the case. It seems that they specify TV not because they don't think that this should be blocked like other media formats, but because Apple TV is coming from a disadvantage and they want to encourage all of those other things like AirPlay and the search stuff. But it does not answer the question of like, it seems like Netflix is a big opposition to being into the TV app, for example, or being in, they want to control the experience and they can't do, they can't say a subscription directly. Even through the app, without sharing money with Apple, they've got to go around, they've got to go to their website and do that. So why doesn't this incentive apply more widely? You know, like, and if the program exists and it's always been this way and we just didn't know about it, then like, you know, why aren't there, isn't there a higher success rate of,
yeah, it's clearly brand new because there's basically only one partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just think about it as something that's been around for 5 years. Like, okay, it's not working. You know, they've only gotten three partners ever. So there's got to be a better way if that's their end goal. So then a solution would be to give, kind of piecemeal it out. Well, let Netflix, because they are major, sell, but then require them to just be in one thing. You know, say you don't have to be in the TV app, but we want other things, and they don't have AirPlay anymore. They're going backwards in that sense. Not have all of these things required, so it's a weird one.
Like Kindle, there's no logical reason why the App Store should be more favorable to video content than eBooks or music or anything else, right? There's no like sense to it. The truth is, Apple wants to expand its reach into video content and TV. And so they've basically just said, that even App Store where everyone complies by the same rules? Well, we're going to carve out this nice exception where video apps that we pick on our schedule can have much better financial terms,
mm-hmm.
right? Because one way to read this statement is that to be able to offer an alternative payment method, you must integrate with the TV app, support AirPlay 2, make a tvOS app, integrate with Siri, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this statement is a abridged version of the truth, because I think you could come to, like, I think a cable company could come to Apple and say, look, we're willing to integrate the TV app. We're willing to support AirPlay 2. We'll give you an Apple TV yes. app. We'll support a universal search. We'll do everything you've just put on this little list. Can we use our own payment method? And Apple would go, no.
What?
Or they would go,
look at Hulu. Like, isn't Hulu all those things?
Yes.
And you can't buy Hulu directly.
Yeah, and if they could, they'd be snapping their arm off, right? Because it'd be pure win for Hulu. They'd be making more money for doing basically nothing, right?
And they don't sell like content piece by piece, but they sell it as a subscription. And so is that where there's? But then the cable comp, like the other two examples, they're not like Amazon Prime Video, where right. it's basically right. iTunes so, movies and TV shows.
So Altice One and Canal Plus have deals with Apple to sell the Apple TV 4K as a cable box.
Even more of like a special scenario.
Exactly, yeah. right? This isn't like some open program where it's like, if you do these five things, we'll let you do this. It's, if we're feeling nice and we want to make a deal with these select partners, we'll let you you know, make some more money, and then maybe you can also integrate with the TV app. Like, I don't think it works like, integrate with the TV app, then you can be in this program. It's more like, we'll invite you to the program, and then if you want to, you can be part of the TV app, right? Like, it's completely flipped on its head, and obviously Apple PR has done this nice statement where it sounds like the other way around. So then you go, oh, look, Netflix is evil. In reality, Apple's basically judge, jury, and executioner, and they're having no loss in this scenario, because this is how it's going to work, right? So by default, every app has to give Apple 30%, right? Then just imagine random video app A. Random video app A becomes really popular, so popular that they don't need to sell directly to customers through their app on the App Store. They're so popular that they know people will sign up through the website. So at that point, they remove all purchasing through the app and they're only selling online, right? And so now Apple is making 0% from this person. So at that point, Apple can go, look, we're now making zero money from this person. If we entice them into this arrangement and get this deal, we were making some money from in-app purchases rather than zero. And so basically Apple has basically made another situation where it can make more money at its complete discretion, right? Like, I don't think this resolves any antitrust complaint or anti-competition complaint.
It makes it worse. Yeah, on the surface, it's like, oh, Apple's being more open with a major company, so it affects a lot of people. But actually, it makes it worse. It's like, exactly. It makes everyone else that's left out feel even worse and even more of an example of how it's not an even playing field. Yeah.
Yeah, like, if you're Eddie Q's best friend, now you can make a bit more money. But apart from that, you're in the same boat as everyone else. So now Amazon's got even more an advantage over Netflix in the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just caused more inequality, right? Like, before, you could make an argument that Apple applies the same rules to everyone, so at least that's kind of fair, right? But now it's like, for Apple's just own internal strategic aims, they can make whatever partnerships they want with whoever they want to give them a different deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing that applies to me here is that I use the Fire TV stick and then the Fire TV cube on the TVs in our house because you get Google, you get YouTube in 4K. You get voice control from the box with the cube. And those are two things that Apple hasn't done yet, or they've not worked out a deal to get 4K YouTube because of the format issue. And then they've not done a box that either has Siri built in or integrates deeply with the HomePod so that you can just speak into the air and control your TV. And it's those two things are not perfect because, I mean, they've got the Amazon kind of like threshold for design where it's not pretty and it's the UI is like usable, but you see a lot of sponsored stuff too. But it's as painful as that is. It's worth it for me to have the 4K YouTube content because you can have an Apple TV 4K with a 4K TV and not get Apple get YouTube in 4K. And you've also got the TV app now, so it's just there's very little that you give up in that scenario. What you can't do is on the Apple TV app, you can browse the iTunes store to see movies and TV shows, and I think you can like add them to your Up Next list. But you can't buy them there. There's a button that says how to purchase, I think, and you click it and it tells you, you know, everywhere that you can make purchases from the iTunes store, which isn't the box. And I have to imagine that it's some part of the scenario, you know, of their established program. There you will soon see the ability to purchase movies and TV shows on the Apple TV app on Fire TV and Fire Cube. And it's still it wouldn't solve it everywhere else, you know, with all the built-in apps and on other devices like Roku. But, you know, why not now? Because it's the equivalent of what they're doing.
Roku lets you buy through them, by the way.
Okay.
Because they don't take a cut. Roku has a funny business model where they take a cut of advertising in an app. But if you just sell something, you keep all of the money.
Yep.
Which makes no sense, right? But that's so on the Apple TV app on Roku, you can buy through the iTunes store. Yeah, anything you want.
Yeah. Hey, let's pause for a second. I'm going to do a story real quick.
Oh. When people saw this news come out, I think a lot of them saw it as like a relaxing and Apple doing like a favor to the world and or at least to, you know, the companies that are video apps. I really don't see it like that. Like, I think this is just a way that Apple has optimized its processes to make more money from service revenue, because they've got a new avenue now to extract at least some money from big apps that were previously giving them nothing at all. So I don't think this helps them with the anti-competitive argument, and I don't think it makes it fairer for everyone, and it definitely doesn't seem like this program is something that's going to be rolled out widely to a lot of developers. It's going to remain like, you know, a gentleman's members club type arrangement where Apple only picks places where it's, you know, it really makes sense strategic to them. And then it's fine. Apple's a business. It does great as an indie developer that now it really feels like there are many stilted tiers of the store. But customers, it's good, obviously, because it was stupid that you couldn't buy stuff inside the Amazon app. So there is customer benefit. It's not like, you know, optimizing for profit and at the expense of customers. It's more like optimizing for profit at the expense of developers that aren't, you know, multi-billion dollar companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how long until Netflix does this?
Well,
it's a long established program.
Yeah, this long established program that started this week. You have to think they're now renegotiating, right?
Mm.
You have to think so. And I would expect that Apple is also newly establishing established programs for other media types as well.
Mm-hmm. That'd
like
be good.
Music, yeah. Right? Because if they can get Spotify to agree to something like this, then a lot of the monopoly pressure disappears. Like, Spotify is by far the one that's been shouting the loudest and complaining the most. And technically, these policies are more anti-competitive than not, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you can wipe out the people complaining about it, then, you know, you're probably achieving the same result.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, there's so much complexity in, like, why this is important, because it's a very simple thing to just look at and see. But zoom way out, and it's just good for users. I mean, when the Prime Video app came to Apple TV, it was like, you could ask to see content, and you'd see just so much stuff that wasn't included in your Prime Video subscription that you had to purchase. So it could seek it out, but it was mixed in. It was like if there was no wall between the TV Plus subscription and then the iTunes movies and TV store, like the page one of the Apple TV app, you know, where it's like, oh, you have it, but you don't really have it. You got to buy it. So now, and you can't buy it from the device. So now that you can actually complete the process and buy it from the device if you need to.
Yeah, and I definitely think you're right in that Apple has enough leverage in this argument to force Amazon to let it buy stuff on its platform. It's just probably a matter of time there for it to be released.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We are sponsored this week by Pillow. Getting a good night's sleep is underrated, but with a little help, it can be life-changing. Pillow is an all-in-one sleep tracking solution to help you be more aware of your sleep patterns and discover what might be affecting your sleep quality. If you have an Apple Watch, tracking your sleep is as easy as wearing it to bed. Pillow will track and analyze your sleep automatically. One of Pillow's most loved features is the ability to get a detailed heart rate diagram of every sleep session. You can compare your sleep quality with your weight, steps, caffeine consumption, and many other health metrics to discover how they might be affecting how you sleep. You can enable recording, and Pillow will save the sounds that you make during sleep. That means you can find out about sleep talking, sleep apnea, snoring, other random unexpected noises that might be keeping you up and affecting a good night's sleep. And a lot of users have tried this out and been surprised by the results. Now, Pillow is very privacy-minded. All of your sleep and audio data is encrypted and stored on your device. When it syncs to iCloud, it's using end-to-end encryption. Pillow doesn't have user accounts, you can use it anonymously, and it doesn't collect or send your personal data anywhere else. Now, naps can boost your focus and your creativity and your overall well-being. And if you're working from home, you can also take naps using Pillow's power nap modes. If you need an alarm, Pillow can wake you up using your iPhone, watch, or iPad. If you have watchOS 6 installed on your Apple Watch, the latest update of Pillow uses the new extended runtime features to minimize battery consumption too. Pillow is available in the App Store for the iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. Discover all of Pillow's features and download the app at naybox.com/pillow. That's spelled naybox.com/pillow. Sleep well and stay safe. Our thanks to Pillow for their support of 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour.
Let's talk about A couple of things here. Well, I guess the question you made, do you want to talk about the new story that we just ran in the middle of the podcast?
You can, yeah, if you can bring that up.
Okay. Okay. I'll bring it up. And so what that story is that 9to5 Mac has received new reliable information on the so-called iPhone 9. And this is the iPhone 8 replacement, hence 9 as the reference there, except that it's sort of taking the role of the iPhone SE did in 2016, where you've got an old case design with you know, vastly improved internals to make it as modern as the new lineup. And so what we can confirm is that, you know, Apple's ready to release this thing. So it's either already out by now, like you know, or we can, expect to see it early next week, not like mid month, but early next week. And, also that there are three colors. This part corroborates reporting from Ming-Chi Kuo last October that there'd be a dark version. So black, like the, like you see with the, well, the 10R you're used to.
The iPhone 11 right now.
With the iPhone 11 right now, and then white. And so not quite space gray and silver, but they've got like just actually like black glass and white glass with the tinted aluminum bands. And then red, so product red from the start. And so we saw the iPhone 8 in product red mid-cycle, right? And so This is what we now know will be called the iPhone SE. Again, it's just the 2020 version instead of the 2016 version, and it will come in red from day one as well. And something interesting is that Ming-Chi Kuo had reported in October that there would be two storage options starting from $399, 64 gigabytes, and then 120 gigabytes. And what we've learned is that we totally expect to see a 256 gigabyte option as well. We can't confirm the pricing, but if we look at what Kuo believed, you know, say 400, you can imagine just adding $100 to that as you go. And, 256 gigabytes that'll last for a while. It's pretty good. And then we've got details in the story if this isn't already out yet about the different case colors as well. So two silicon cases and three leather cases. And, from what we can tell, I mean, this looks imminent. I mean, and also we already expect some things from this. So earlier this week we reported that the new iPhone will have it will support the future feature with car key, where you can use it to replace your car keys. And what's the other feature that's in this?
Express
Transit. So what's interesting there is this is a Touch ID phone, so not Face ID, but a Touch ID. And so far, every Express Transit phone, I believe, is a Face ID phone. This will be a Touch ID phone with that feature. And that's the feature where you can use your iPhone to, you know, use the subway system. Even if your iPhone dies, you've got some reserve in there that's just intended for that purpose only. And it was not in the iPhone 8, and so it will be in the iPhone SE. And then we also, just based on early reporting, we believe that will not have 3D touch like the iPhone XR, 11, 11 Pro, and 11 Pro Max. It'll use that instead, we imagine, for battery life. So that would be one of the also improvements from the iPhone 8 is that, hey, this is the new iPhone SE. The 8's gone, and you get way more battery life than you got with the 8, just like you did when you went from the iPhone XS to the iPhone 11 Pro. Same design, remove 3D touch inside, more room for battery. There you go. So that's our new reporting. It's either already an announcement from Apple, or if it's not, then you can expect it early next week.
It's very, 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 very soon.
Yeah. And we had to actually pause the show and like write it up as we were recording the episode. So there you go. The other thing is about that Tile competitor, the AirTag device. So tell me what's going on there this week.
Yeah, so obviously we've done loads of reporting about the AirTags for more than a year. Generally, the consensus is Apple was trying to ship them for the holiday season last year, which is why the iPhone 11 had the U1 chip in it, so that they could work together and Apple could sell the iPhone 11 and iPhone Pro and then maybe sell some of the, you know, AirTag accessories at the same time. Obviously, that didn't happen. But, you know, imminently, we think that these tags are going to come out, like, this month, June, before the end of the year, right? Like, and to add fuel to that fire, the Apple support account on YouTube uploaded a video about erasing your device, and so that involved turning off Find My iPhone. And if you look carefully at the screenshot, the page with the Find My iPhone settings under the enable offline finding option, which is the thing they introduced last year, which allows you to find devices without actually having to like have active GPS. It beacons through other devices nearby.
Mm-hmm.
The little subtitle description of the setting.
Offline finding devices. So you get the Find My iPhone feature, you turn on or off. And there's also another one to participate in that, like the network of iPhones if your phone's off.
Yes, yeah. Oh, so the private encrypted, you know, nodal network, Find My Network thing where like an iPad without Wi-Fi could technically be found because it would ping a little Bluetooth signal to an iPhone that walks past it and then it could, you know, route back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the description, obviously, on the current builds of iOS does not mention AirTags, but on this Apple support video, it says offline finding enables this device and AirTags to be found when not connected to Wi-Fi or cellular. So at least whatever random internal build that Apple support account uses to make its tutorial videos, that assumes that the AirTags are already out. This reminds me a lot of the screenshot we found a few months ago where it was the Apple Watch alarms app, and it talked about the sleep app that also doesn't exist yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just another indicator that these AirTags were probably meant to already be out, and they're coming out soon-ish.
Yeah, our friend Stephen Chotten-Smith had a fine tweet, which is that his read on just the leak happening at all is that because it's been out in the open for over a year now, I mean, it was prior to WWDC last year that Rambo found it for 95 Mac last year. That it's been so like, and then the marketing name later on, that AirTag as a thing in the public domain has been so present that it's easy for someone in the video team to just overlook it as something to hide. It's like, oh, that, yeah, that's, everyone knows about those. And turns out, no, they haven't launched
yet. I'm kind of surprised that the Apple support YouTube video team uses internal builds at all. You'd think they just use like the public releases.
Yeah, me too. Clearly they don't, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they're specialized for some purpose too, that they're not the public versions.
You know? They might have like, some of the notifications are automatically disabled, the carrier names are blanked out, that kind of thing.
Some content populated, but you know,
different behaviors. Yeah, just so it's ready for video, right? So there's no like random iCloud account information anywhere and stuff.
Yeah. But it is funny to have that happen to a publicly facing version of iOS, because you know, you have to plan for those to be out in public too. So it's a very interesting like accident to happen in public.
Yeah, and about 5 minutes after it was all posted everywhere, Apple removed the video from public consumption.
Yeah, it was marked as private, which makes me like, you think it was like scheduled maybe, you know, or they just plan to put it out there when this new iPhone is out there too, or well, not, I guess it wouldn't be tied to the iPhone unless they release these with the iPhone as like a together thing, but
I mean, that'd be cool.
That would be cool.
I'm down to buy like one AirTag.
The price is like such a make or break thing for this, because we've talked at length about what they will do and what the appeal is, and there's some interesting stuff there. But you know, we were talking before the podcast, you know, how many would you buy for $50? How many would you buy for $80? And the answer quickly becomes $80, one for work, and that's it. Like, just because we can talk about it and write stories about it, but you're not going to, you could come to a point where the thing that you put it on is not worth the thing that you're using to track, you know. You can't track something that costs you $50 to replace with an $80 tag.
Yeah, then you need a tag to look after your tag.
Yeah, you need like a tile, like a cheap tile for your pricey tag, your tag.
So make sure I don't lose my $99 air tag. I've got a $20 tile attached to it.
Exactly. But if they're cheap, then I can imagine, or if they're, you know, relatively affordable, then I can imagine some good applications. One thing I was looking at, we had someone email us during the show too, that just as the concept is useful for pets, that you put one on the pet's collar. I'm sure that's something we've talked about before. And I was actually looking at something like that because, my dog Apollo is now, he's been an inside dog for this whole year. But we finally finished the fencing in the backyard. And so now he gets to stay outside all day long and then come in at night. And he loves it. And I'm a little bit paranoid that he's going to like dig out and get away. Whereas in the house, I was not worried. And so I was looking at, you know, A, trackers. I won't buy a towel right now until we know what Apple's thing is. But then there's this other category of GPS enabled collars with LTE. So importantly, if you can't get a GPS, you know, ping, there's LTE, and if you want to communicate that to something that's not near you, you know, you've got LTE to communicate it to you. So that's more sophisticated than what a one of these tiles would do, I think, or AirTags would do. But you also, you know, you pay more for it and you pay a fee for that service. But then for other things like just your keys, man, I mean, yeah. On one hand, we're seeing Apple make something that you put on your keys to track if they get lost. On the other hand, we're seeing them like replace car keys with your iPhone and Apple Watch with car key feature.
Yeah, or maybe like you put it in your wallet so you don't lose, you know, your money and stuff, or you put it in your luggage, you put it in your laptop bag. Like, that's why I kind of think it's specialized enough that Apple's probably going to go for a more premium product that you only buy like one or two of, and you put on your, like, you know, really expensive valuables. Whereas obviously Tiles, only business is selling trackers, so they have really cheaper ones that they want you to buy like 10 of. Plus now they have the Tile subscription service and all that stuff. But as we talked about before, Apple's Tile is functionally more capable than the Tile tracker, and it includes like stuff like ultra wideband that the Tile trackers don't have at all at the moment. And so basically my like benchmark for the AirTags prices, I looked at the most expensive Tile that they sell, and that sells for £30, which is about $35, right? And then I was like, eh, put $15 on that, it comes to 50, that sounds like a round number. So I'm kind of like working on a benchmark of that the AirTags gonna be around $50 ish and you know, at $50, I'd buy one or two and use them. I'm not going to buy like 20, right? But there's, you know, specific places where they might come in handy. And like, you know, for instance, on your keys, right? Because the reality is, even if you do have a car key in the future, you're still going to have keys because you've got to get in your door, right? At the very least, you're going to have to get.
Well, I don't have a key for my door either. It's the HomeKit lock with a passcode on it.
You know what I mean.
You cannot put a key in the door. If I replace my car key.
Every single person is going to have something that they want to make sure they don't lose. Like a laptop bag is a good example.
Sure, yeah.
Or luggage or your keys or whatever.
Yeah.
And so say if Apple worked it out that, oh, if we can sell someone an AirTag like, you know, once every 2 years, you know, that's like $100 of additional revenue every 2 years, right? Like, I think that's a business that they'd be interested enough in to do. I really hope they don't have a subscription service as part of this, like what Tile does, because I don't think it'd be worth it at that point.
Apple will never do a subscription service, Mayo.
Never. And to be honest, even the $50 price point, I'm kind of doubting. My guess has been maybe too low. Like,
oh no.
Steve Trout and Smith made a good point that Apple sells, because we expect this thing to have a cell battery, right? The little circular battery. And Apple sells a product for that today for $25. And that's the completely inert old Apple TV remote. That is just like a slick piece of aluminium with four buttons on it. Mm-hmm. And that sells for $25. So maybe $50 is too cheap. I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm looking at Tile's prices right now, and they have the basic one for $25. And like you mentioned, the Pro is $35, or you can buy two for $60 and save $10, or buy four for $100 and save $40. They've also got this sticker, which is like a very slimmer version of their tracker, and that's the one that's like has like a premium price to it because it's so small, and that's $40. So you can imagine Apple's being sleek and, you know, maybe more like the sticker and form factor and being tiny, and then say $40, add Apple's premium to that, and then you're
double it, $80.
Yeah, $80. It's terrible, but okay, we'll see there.
Yeah, like I don't think you'd find people buy more than like one of them, but at $80, I think it could probably be a successful product, right?
Yeah.
The classic, slightly too expensive, probably, but useful, if you know what I mean.
I mean, I don't know that Apple's known to be doing these combo packs, but then it's actually two for eight for $40 from Tile. So they don't let you buy just one of those stickers. It's in two packs.
Okay, so then maybe it could be one for 50.
Yeah, right? And then if you buy four, you get them for $60, and so that's $20 off. So, and you know, maybe Apple could do these in packs like that, where like you can't buy more than, you can't just buy one, you have to buy a pack of three, and they're $60. Or, you know, that would be compelling.
No, Apple's pack of three would be $100.
Yeah. Oh no. But, we'll see. This is one of the things that, like, the product in general, like if you just described it, it's kind of mundane. Like, it's a tracker. Trackers exist. You don't necessarily have to have one. It solves a small inconvenience that you've managed to live with this whole time otherwise. It's mostly interesting because it's from Apple, and then how it interacts with the network of iPhones. But then the thing that really makes it so interesting is that it's been over a year that we've been talking about this thing, and it went from just far-fetched to any day now, you know, in terms of how, you know, it's been so long and that it's still in development.
for sure. Yeah, I think it's cool. Like I know it is kind of like obviously mundane in the scheme of things, but the particular implementation Apple's doing is quite cool with the UWB integration and everything. Like if they were literally just cloning a tile and putting it out, like who cares, right?
But yeah,
there is actually some, you know, special sauce there that would be interesting to see. We are sponsored this week by Samebox, the easiest way to get your email under control and hit that magic inbox zero. If email is an overwhelming mess for you, like it is for so many, Samebox is the tool that you need to use. Samebox uses artificial intelligence to monitor your inbox, making sure you see the important emails and aren't distracted by the rest. As messages hit your inbox, Samebox does the triage for you. Important emails stay in your inbox and everything else is put into your Same Later folder for you to peruse at your convenience. It makes it super easy to separate the email that you need to immediately pay attention to and what stuff you can get to later. And even better, you don't need to use a special app or a weird plugin to use the Samebox service. One of the best features of Samebox is the black hole. Do you have an annoying sender who just keeps emailing you? Maybe it's a brand that refuses to stop messaging you, no matter how many times you click unsubscribe. We'll just drag a message to the same black hole folder, and you'll never have to hear from that sender again. Done. Let's say, alternatively, that you've got a sender that you just need to keep tabs on their reply, like you've sent a message to them and you want to know and you want to be reminded when they come back to you. The Same Reminders feature will watch to see if they reply, and if they don't by a date that you specify, Samebox alerts you so that you can follow up with them in a natural way. Samebox works with every single email server or service that has ever been created. There's nothing to learn and nothing to install. See it for yourself by visiting sanebox.com/9to5Mac, where you can get a 2-week free trial and a $25 credit. That's spelled sanebox.com/9to5Mac. Sanebox.com/9to5Mac. Our thanks to Samebox for their support of Happy Hour.
Also, this is a busy Apple week for stories because we talked for so long already, and now we're finally getting to Apple's acquisition of Dark Sky, which, wow, that was a surprise. That came out of left field. But it was on March 31st, not quite April 1st, which is April Fool's Day and the anniversary of Apple as a company, I think 44 years now. But the eve of that, and totally serious, Dark Sky announced that they were bought by Apple. They are no longer supporting their Android app, which is fairly new, but people liked it. And
it had millions of downloads.
Millions of downloads, yeah. And then I saw one report that says like half of their downloads were that. And I think that app was like free with ads, and then you can subscribe to remove them maybe. And then the iPhone one's always been $4 with no ads, no subscription. So of course the free one will have, you know, a lot of downloads compared to the paid one. Even though it's not as old. But then I think the bigger thing, you know, Android app, whatever, but the bigger thing is that the API that a lot of iOS apps use as a data source, either the only data source or an option, is going away by the end of 2021. And, you know, that's going to affect, I think, maybe more people than the Android app that does. But you know, within minutes of being bought, you know, or the announcement dropping, the app moved from the Dark Sky App Store account to Apple's App Store account, and then they had like they have a section in the app for like forecast alert or weather alerts, like extreme heat, you know, or flooding, and that became Dark Sky is now with Apple or something like that. So,
yeah, and the first time you launch it, it says you're now subscribed to Apple's privacy policy. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I had the last push alert I have from Dark Sky is that I have to update to continue receiving alerts. And I guess it's, you know, because of the acquisition and the privacy policy. It's interesting. Like, why did they buy Dark Sky? You know, this is one of the apps where in this week where I'm kind of nostalgic about my time at 9to5 Mac so far. One of the early stories that I wrote was about Dark Sky. And I recall pitching, it was like in May 2013. And so I was only like a month in the job or so. And I remember pitching it as like, hey, I want to write about this app update. And it was like UK support for Dark Sky was the main thing. And I recall like back in, I guess we used HipChat at the time, little bit of pushback of like, never heard of it, you know, and it was, it was version three of the app. So it, you know, wasn't brand new, but it just wasn't known by everybody. And by the time this was announced yesterday, like everyone on Twitter had, you know, some opinion about it because it's something that we at least know about. I mean, it's been in Apple commercials, especially the watch, early watch commercials would show, you know, receiving an alert on your watch about it's going to rain soon. And Dark Sky's like trick is that it's hyper local weather. So, you know, not just your city, but like around you. And the alerts are for if it's going to start raining or snowing within, you know, the next few minutes so that you know to plan before you go outside. Or if you're stuck in a storm, you can look at the app and you can even receive alerts for that, that the downpour will soon stop, you know, and it kind of gives you the window of like when, you know, it's not going to rain anymore. And that's like the big thing is that they do forecasts and everything else too. But I think the most important thing for this story is that they're their own weather source. You know, they're a data provider for other apps and their own.
Yeah, they collect like raw data from these like government sources, which have crazy, like completely inhumane APIs that like you have to wrangle in five ways to Sunday to make them work. And they like ingest all of that, reformat it, make their weather predictions like the rain precipitation stuff, and then they resell that through the API, which then loads of other clients use.
Yeah, so they call it their homegrown data source. And Apple has relied on, most recently, the Weather Channel for their data in the Weather app. The Weather app is not updated very frequently. So you've got the iOS 7 version, which was like a facelift, you know, skin change for the iOS 6 version. Then it was a good change, but the only thing that's been changed since then is like you get I think wind speeds and stuff like that are different.
Air quality,
yeah. So just some more data sources. And your big annoyance is that whenever you ask your HomePod for the weather, what does it tell you every few times?
Yeah, so about one in five times it'll say, this weather information is provided to you by the Weather Channel.
Thank you. So, and like, yeah.
It just feels like an ad. I know. It's like, go away.
Do you have the weather? Is the Weather Channel, like, is that a channel in the UK that you can tune into?
The Weather Channel, I don't believe, is a channel.
Okay, because it's a channel on, I think, cable TV in the US. So, yeah. But you know, they've had a lot of issues as a data provider in apps that are about, you know, privacy and, like, you know, selling data mining and selling it off, you know. So that's been...
Like, weather apps in general have a bad reputation for being a bit slimy and selling your data and sharing your location with loads of third-party companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think they bought Dark Sky then? Do you think they just bought it to replace the weather, the third-party data source they currently use with their own?
I hope it's more ambitious than that. I mean, I wrote a story that's like, you know, thoughts on this and what can come. And, you know, a few things to it. It's like, You at least, you know, like a couple of people on the team anyway. So it's a very small team. It's not an aqua hire where you hire just the engineers to work on like the weather app going forward. They want the data too, you know, otherwise they could maybe sell Dark Sky to somebody else or something. I don't know. But it seems to be that they also want not just the engineers, but the product. And that, you know, by continuing to sell Dark Sky for $4 on the App Store today, they, you know, that kind of further tells you that. Then what can happen next? You know, I think it's like a timeline. You know, the easiest thing to do is to replace the Weather Channel and have your own, you know, you can say provided by Dark Sky if you want to, or you can just not say where, and it's Apple's data provider. And that seems to be like, I don't know if it'd be a hard task, but I just imagine that it's changing out where you get your data and it populates the app.
They do have a problem where Dark Sky is like focused on the US and the UK, and their data for the rest of the world is very patchy or not very reliable and not very good.
Yeah. And you could see them continuing to use other sources around the world. Like, is the Weather Channel the best one for every region in the US or not in the US, in the world, or does it vary by
I think they use a couple. Like China has a different one, for instance.
Yeah. So I could see them seeing, you know, like they are totally okay with having services that are only available in the US, UK, and Australia, for example. You know, in this case, it's like the US and the UK, and I'm not sure if there's anywhere else. It's like you can use the service, but it's not as good. So it could be based on region. Then there's the thing of like, well, they don't, Dark Sky has an app everywhere. It's on the iPhone, Apple Watch, iPad, and then they have a website for the Mac, which will go away by the end of next year, I believe, it sounds like. That gives them the next year and a half to recreate Apple's weather app for those platforms too. And instead of being a website, it'd be a Mac app, and it would most certainly be a Mac Catalyst app ported from the iPad. I don't think that what you'd see is like the weather app go away and now Dark Sky the app is like the new weather app and they just call it weather, because it's not as too much of a compromise in terms of like, you know, what you get from it and the design and everything.
Dark Sky's current app is not like, it's very custom, it's very weird, right?
And like, it didn't benefit from the iOS 7 transition either. Like, I think it was much clearer to read. It had the goals of iOS 7, where there's like clarity and no confusion about like what's content and what's information and everything, and what's just designed for the look of it. But it was harder to use after iOS 7.
They went very over the top on like the blurs, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, abstract and concepts. Yeah. Like this.
Yeah, I think what you'll see is, obviously, nothing's going to happen this year. Like, iOS 14 will have no changes.
Well, right? Why can't iOS 14 have the behind-the-scenes data provider change?
I think it's too late already. Like, we saw Shortcuts get acquired about this time in 2017, and then nothing happened until 2018, when literally they just started including the Shortcuts app. Basically, they just renamed Workflow to Shortcuts and start including it on the OS with basically no other changes, right? Like, it wasn't like they added a load of features in the first year. They basically just added the app. But you could have said that's hardly any work where they knew the year before. Well, I think the time's run out. We talked about before like how the betas of iOS 14 are getting frozen in like 3 weeks' time, right? 4 weeks' time. This acquisition clearly has just started now and, you know, presumably is closing soonish because there isn't going to be any competitive concerns by regulators. Mm. But we are in the middle of like this crisis where no one can leave their houses.
Mm.
And so you're going to need these people to interface with the engineers that currently work on the weather app. There's going to be loads of infrastructure changes to actually change the data source. Like, Dark Sky is probably going to, if you just, you know, wholesale switch the API over, the millions and millions and millions of iOS users are probably going to overload the current Dark Sky servers. That needs a lot of preparation. I don't think it's something they can quickly do, like, in the space of a month.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Well.
And then you have the problems of all the international issues, right? I fully expect them to transition to the Dark Sky data source, you know, rebranded under the Apple umbrella. I don't think it's going to happen in 40.0, and I doubt it would happen this year.
Mm, yeah,
I think the cogs move too slowly to make it work. Like, they bought Beats in 2013. We didn't see that come to Apple Music till 2015.
That's way harder though. That's much harder, I think.
That's hard. But Shortcuts, I think, is a good example where, like, what they did a year later, they, you know, intuitively they probably could have just done it in the first year, but they didn't, right?
yeah
so I think it's too late, simply. Like, beta 1 of iOS 14 is close to done.
That's just
the truth.
I don't see this. I think it's much easier than Shortcuts, because Shortcuts is like integration throughout the system, but
the first year they had very little integration.
Yeah,
they literally just like took the app and just plonked it over there, like, I just made it install by default.
Pre-install it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they could certainly do that here. I also had a thought that maybe there's, you know, what's in 14 is what's in 14 now, and that, you know, if you want to make it like more feature rich, then an acquisition is a way to do that in the short and sports. And you can have like a 14.1 or 2 that shows us this by the end of the year or like, early next year.
But you can also make the argument that, like, you know, if Apple wanted to redesign the app for iOS 14, they'd have bought Dark Sky last year.
Hmm.
Right? Like, it feels way too late to, like, oh, we're scrambling. Let's just buy this app, and then somehow we're going to change the data sources over in, like, a month's time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we're already seeing how much their production schedules are messed up and their development things are all wonky at the moment, just by completely external factors. Like, I think integration of acquisition is, you know, it's not a thing that you just do in like a day, right?
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
It's probably a lot of stuff there.
Yeah. The other thing is, you know, is so I ask some people that are developers like you, you know, what do you want from this acquisition? Like, what would it mean for you? And the main thing that I got was, that there are a number of developers who could use a third party weather provider, but they don't want to have any third party APIs because of privacy reasons, and it's just more complicated. And that's kind of their policy as an app, is that it's privacy focused. And if they could say that Apple's the weather provider, then they would write features that they couldn't otherwise without having some third party, you know, involved. And so, you know, and I, you know, it's, I think it's certainly too soon to see that, but this idea of like a WeatherKit API from Apple in the future, you know, with iOS 15 or, you know, I can't rule out something big in like the 0.3 versions that come out the next year, you know. I mean, look at cursor support. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, 0.3 is fine. Like, that's far enough away that I think okay. they could actually start doing something like yeah. changing the data sort of stuff. But 14.0, 14.1, no chance.
Yep.
But that's my forecast.
That's your forecast. I mean, I did have some. I think the last line, I was not in a good mood. Perhaps a blue sky scenario like that could be in the forecast for a future version of Apple's developer tools. So,
like, I think it's great that they're clearly investing in the weather application. Because
it's a major category that's just tarnished with privacy issues.
Yeah. And as well as just like, you know, re-implementing the UI and adding a few more features, the hyper-local like rain notifications are something that, you know, is pretty cool when it works in Dark Sky. And you can imagine it being a huge customer-facing feature like that they could promote from, you know, all week long to people. Like, upgrade to iOS 15 and you can get told when it's about to rain, because most people have never heard that it's even a thing they can do, right? Like, so it would be brand new to so many people in the world that, like, wow, I can now get my phone to tell me when it's about to rain. This is like magic. And you can imagine integrations with Apple Maps as well. Maybe they can put like the rain forecast on the map, right? Like, weather layers there. You can imagine Siri could like prompt you that it's going to rain, so maybe you want to leave for work slightly earlier. Like, there's huge scope there for them to integrate that stuff. Like, and even in the original Siri adverts in like 2011, one of the questions they'd always show is like, is it going to rain tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
And you just get like the forecast for tomorrow, and you'd be like, it looks like you need an umbrella. Like, they could amplify that up so much with, you know, the dark sky information. And yeah, it probably would start exclusively in like the United States, and then they can slowly roll it over to other places over time. But that's exactly what they're doing with maps, right? They redid
exactly,
the map
yeah.
for the US last year, and now they're very slowly expanding it to other countries.
I mean, Apple wants to own the stack, and I mentioned the maps thing in my story because, like, you know, there are features that you couldn't do with Apple Maps without making, you know, a tough negotiation with Google, turn return directions, eventually offline maps. You know, you can't even do that with your other map partners. And so that will be coming when, you know, we believe once Apple, you know, has their full map complete, or, you know, some feature iOS version, I guess, but, yeah, there's things that you could do with data that once you own it, that, you know, you can have more features just based on that alone. And we already see.
And you could get rid of the dumb advertising in Siri and the little, and when you scroll to the bottom of the widgets view on iOS, it says, your weather information is provided by the Weather Channel. Like, mm-hmm. surely Jony Ive and the top designers at Apple must hate having that line there. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously Jony Ive doesn't work there anymore, but you know what I mean. Like,
he has to use the fastest software.
You got, like, it just, they're like a $1 trillion company, and they have to have like an advertisement for the Weather Channel on the second home screen of the billion devices sold. Like, it just feels bad. So even if all they did with this, you know, and it doesn't seem like they spent a lot of money on Dark Sky, so they're probably going to make the money back on the acquisition just in the reduction of licensing fees that they have to pay to the Weather Channel currently, right? So It probably makes sense financially as well as everything else. But even if all they did was just get rid of that little like one sentence, it would be so worth it.
Maybe that's why you've not been able to put widgets on the home screen yet, and they're waiting for you to get rid of that banner, and then it's game over. You can put widgets wherever you want them.
Yeah, the next one to fall would be the Yahoo Finance thing for the stocks widget. That's another.
Yeah, I'm interested in that, because we discussed that a little bit. It's like, you know, my guess was like, surely they could replace that with their own data, and that Yahoo is the middleman, because wasn't Yahoo a weather provider too? Or before it was literally the Weather Channel. I guess there was some business change behind the scenes. Yeah. But I guess, what you were saying is that Yahoo, what they're doing with stock information is at least a big part of their business. And so they're a competent source there.
Yeah. I do think there is like, they're not just like a rebrand. They're actually like doing something, if you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And it's going to, and like Apple couldn't buy like the Yahoo Finance division only. If you see it, they'd have to buy Yahoo. So that's unfeasible, right? So maybe there's an equivalent to Dark Sky in the world that's kind of does the same thing for stocks and they can snap them up soon too.
Yeah. I'm curious about the, you know, the app Robinhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really easy way to, you know, trade stocks on the iPhone. And, you know, it's quite popular with people who like apps like that. And it feels like it's made by Apple. I mean, it's like you could see there being a version of stocks. It's like Stocks Plus or something. And it's that.
Wow. You actually trade. That'd be elite. But I guess they did make a credit card. So.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm not convinced that they're going to do like an API.
Okay.
I mean, they might do, but like they did one for music, but then it's like, well, they're going to make money off of Apple more.
They do their own stuff with their weather data. Like they put it in maps, you know, they put it in some places where they, I think they will, you know, because they, you know, not just because they put it in maps in some other places, but, this is the privacy angle on all of that. It's like, you know, you can include this, you know, data provider who you may or may not trust, or you can use ours because it's private. And it's not about money. It's about privacy. And it's about, you know, I mean, it's a big problem for Apple that they claim to be the private company, you know, in terms of like, you know, what happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone until you open the App Store. And then it's, you know, and that's one category where they could say, we fixed that privacy hole.
We fixed it. And it is true, actually, if they made like, you know, weather a system API, they could even make it so that if the third party app is using the weather API for its information,
as a user, you could opt to not use that and see theirs.
The third party app wouldn't even have to ask for location permissions.
Oh yeah. It'd be easier.
Yeah.
They could even do an Apple sign in style thing where they're like, if you are a weather app, you have to give the option to use our weather data.
Yeah. There is definitely like, and maybe they could sell it. Like maybe we're being too charitable, and that they would just give the API for free. Like they could sell it to these companies and say, like, if you want to use it, you got to pay us.
Yeah.
The Apple Maps web embed thing is quote unquote free, but if you're a big company, you have to pay for it. So they already do something like that. Like,
remember there was a Twitter API like that you could just use.
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yeah, like the Apple Maps obviously lets you do like maps embeds inside of iOS apps. That's always free. They let you do some kind of like local search lookups inside iOS as well, but not really to the extent that you could like make an alternate maps client for it, right? It's just limited enough to be useful in some situations.
What about CloudKit?
CloudKit is like a sync and storage data platform for that helps make Apple's all iOS apps better, and that is quote unquote free with limits. So if you ever use it, then you do get charged, but most people would never get charged for it. But I think that one you can definitely argue has like widespread appeal of just making all of the App Store better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they do it for weather. Maybe. I don't think it's like 100%. There's definitely benefits and things they could do, especially like the thing where you wouldn't have to require the third party apps to have any location permissions at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. 100% they're going to revamp the weather app. Are they going to do...
And I would also... I thought about this too. It's like, you know, do they do weather app using dark sky data with notifications? Or do they do weather app with dark sky data and dark sky remains this like separate thing that, you know, it's... Because the dark sky app cannot be a weather app on its own. I mean, some people use it that way, but it's mainly about like that what's happening in the next few minutes for participation. Sure, I guess
it's a puzzle. It was definitely out of the blue.
Yeah, that's right. He's like, whoa.
I think it's a good. I think it makes sense for them, right? And I think people got a bit like too annoyed that, you know, they were shutting the API and stuff. Like APIs are never guaranteed to always exist. If Dark Sky was shopping around for an acquisition, there was probably a good chance the API wasn't going to stay around forever anyway, because either DarkSky was going to go out of business or someone else was going to buy the API. Well, and at least the API is being supported through the end of 2021, so it gives a decent amount of time for all these companies that depend on it to find alternate options. Mm-hmm. And if the demand for, you know, a nice weather API is so strong, some other company will fill the gap.
Yeah, and I've seen, I mean, people were even mad about just having a privacy-focused weather app for Android. You know, one, if Google wanted to provide that, they could. The other thing is, I think apps exist. Like, I saw someone recommend Appy Weather. So I don't use Android. I don't know about the apps, but that's one thing that I think is you know, it's in the discussions, at least, as like an alternative. So.
Nice.
Yep. So we'll see what happens to DarkSky, based on your calendar, at least in 2021. And that totally gives us, like, you know, the ending the API thing is like, yeah, I mean, it's generous for, you know, an API, you know, it's goodwill, but also it gives Apple time to, you know, a year and a half's time to kind of have a solution in place for when that goes away.
Yeah, to have a new weather app ready for iOS 15.
At least a new weather app ready for iOS 15, yeah.
Yeah.
So, because you wouldn't want to buy DarkSky, take away something, and have nothing to deliver, you know, even if it isn't an API yet, even if it's, there's just no benefit because there's no new weather app or anything like that, that would be bad. So,
it is kind of funny they're still selling the app and they didn't just like make it free.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Like $4 some. You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess they sell apps, you know? It's not new, but...
And I don't know if this is the actual reason, but, like, it kind of ties into what I said about the servers being overloaded. Like, if they suddenly made it free, would they just, like, collapse the servers because they're not prepared to support that? But...
I mean, I guess they're bought now, right? I mean, they announced the acquisition that it's... Or is it pending? You know, I don't know the specifics of that.
Well, but... that's another question that it's not 100% clear on, because when they bought Shazam... That was, like, announced earlier 2018,
uh-huh.
And then it didn't actually get completed till like, late in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, it went through investigations for privacy or for monopoly reasons, right? And so, but did it move to Apple's account yet? I don't recall. This moved to Apple's account, at least.
I think it did move when they finally closed at the end of last year.
Yeah, so maybe this was just so small it's already closed, too, because they adopted their privacy policy and everything, so... I don't know.
Yeah, presumably it's a done deal.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. We also have a story on Apple Watch Touch ID, and this comes from the Verifier, which
is anything but verified.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny because we've been talking about the Verifier for a long time. Of like, okay, the first time we talked about it was like, we don't know yet because there's no track record. Now I have a track record where things they talk about might be super early in development and eventually come. But they're also so high level that they come sometime anyway.
It doesn't feel like dependable information, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But what they said was this week was that Apple is working on a Touch ID system for the Apple Watch. And one option would be to put it in the crown. So you'd like put your finger on the crown. It'd be like a fingerprint sensor in the button. And then the other way would be to like actually do like the cooler thing, where the fingerprint sensor is like integrated into the screen and you just lay your finger on the screen, it would unlock. You know, they're sensible ideas and that Apple's probably working on down the road. Who knows if it's coming next year, as the Verifier claims, right? What I found interesting is when I posted this story, there was a lot of backlash that was like, why is Apple bothering this? What's the point? Because you can already, you know, you can type in the 4-digit PIN code, or when you unlock your iPhone, it unlocks your watch. What... The roadmap that you can see very clearly being mapped out for the Apple Watch is independence, and it sure looks like we're getting to a point where the watch can be bought on its own and you won't need an iPhone at all, mm-hmm. right? Or they're at least setting it up so that is an option that they can very quickly pivot to if they need to. Like, say if the smartphone market cratered, right? They could just immediately, here's an Apple Watch that basically works by itself. And so in that situation, typing in a PIN code is... always mandatory and always required, right? At least once a day when it's on your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to authenticate with fingerprint and biometrics is way more convenient. Is it super important that... Is it so important? No, that's why they haven't done it already, right?
Right.
Clearly, it must be on the list of things that make the Apple Watch experience nicer. And even in the current world, where you can use your iPhone to unlock your watch, I find personally, I'm always typing in my PIN code at least once a day. And it's... just annoying enough that they should fix it. So
yeah, there are also new things. Like, there's now the App Store on the watch, and you know, you can do, you can make purchases and things. You know, there's the whole, there's always been the whole double click the side button to authenticate. In a future where, you know, we haven't rolled out iPhones getting under the screen Touch ID, right? Like that's back in the rotation of rumors.
Yeah, for sure.
And so in a future where that's a thing, that's a, you know, muscle memory that you have, then having that same thing for the watch would be very cool. You know, even if it's just for, you know, separately this dream of the Apple Watch being standalone, you know, much sooner, that for kids, you know, well, that won't be the watch that the kids get, I imagine, but, you know, long term, it would be ideal is that you get this in the watch. And so I agree like you, it's not something that they needed to do in the first five versions or six versions, but why not? And it's especially tied with the idea of the iPhone eventually getting this, you know, under the screen as an option or as the method, then consistency there would be really cool.
Yeah, for sure. It just seems like I was just surprised that so many people are like, this is stupid, doesn't it? You know, it's a nice little feature that will probably happen one day.
If you don't want an iPhone, no. If you don't want an Apple Watch 8, don't buy it. If you bought one, you don't like it, bring it back. Jonathan, man, iPhone 4 song. Lastly, there's iOS 13.4.5.
No.
Beta 1.5. Yeah, it's from the future. Because we're on iOS 14.4, right? Not even
13.4.
Yeah, 13.4, not 0.4.1. And this is 0.4.5, skipping 1, 2, 3, and 4. And wasn't it the verifier who had a story that was like iOS 13 will only go up to 0.4, you know?
Yeah.
13.4.4. And then like the next day this happens. And. You know, there's history of this happening before where you have a beta version that's like future numbered. And the idea there is that there could be versions in between or something else happened. And
they shipped this. iOS 11.2.2
mm-hmm.
came out.
Yep.
And then 2 weeks later, iOS 11.2.5 came out.
That's right. You know, kind of like the iPhone 8 and 10, but in software, you know, it's just a number. And I, you know, I'm sure there's some significance to it happening, you know, with the development train, and how it all goes together. But no.
Yeah. When it, cause this was Tuesday, right? This came out. And so it seemed like, oh, there must be, pushing through an urgent bug fix of iOS 13.4.1 that will be coming out very, very soon.
Yeah.
So, they're starting the beta train with the number further highest. They've got that leg room. But so to date, iOS 13.4.1 hasn't come out. So it's kind of in a weird like limbo situation. We'll just have to see how it kind of plays out, really.
Mm-hmm.
If the iPhone SE is coming out tomorrow, maybe it runs iOS 13.4.1, which is why it was held up.
Yeah, yeah, why it was skipped, yeah. Or Monday, because if it's not tomorrow, it doesn't mean it's not next week. Yeah, and by tomorrow, I mean today, but whenever.
But we believe very strongly that by the next time we talk, next Thursday on the Happy Hour podcast, we can talk about the iPhone SE 2020.
Yeah, and I'll talk about the new iPad too, because of course I have one, right?
Of course.
Yeah, so I think a 9to5Mac reader and Happy Hour listener and certainly a follower from Twitter was kind enough to take up my offer on Twitter on my old iPad Pro from 2018, and that was to finance the purchase of a new one. So it worked out. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. We can be found online. I'm on Twitter and Apolozak at. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Apolozak. Hello.
It's been a long day.
It's been a long recording session at Apolozak, APOLLOZAC. And you can also read my work, not just on 9to5Mac, but on spaceexplored.com. That's Space News and History. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And you blog at
BZAMayo.com.
That's right. And with that being said, we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.